I didn't know how these messages would fit together, but obviously they're going to fit really well together today. Have a middle-aged woman at work. She's a teacher, and so she's much older than I am. She's actually about 10 years younger, but I don't really know her, but some of the other teachers that have gotten to know her said, don't even talk to her. She's just like a Debbie Downer type. You know, it's like, well, okay. Well, this week I had a chance. I walked by her in a hall. No one else was there. And, you know, it's been a beautiful week. And I said something, but boy, this is really nice. Oh, the allergies here are just terrible. It's just awful. I'm like, well, okay, I understand why they said don't talk to you now. But I want to tie that into the Israelites actually leaving Egypt. And what did they learn? Because now we're out of sin. We're supposed to be in that next phase. Did they really learn anything from what they experienced, what God did for them? So I do want to look at the many times that the Israelites complained. And just it was nonstop. It seemed that they never stopped complaining. But in this world, it's kind of set up that way. Have we ever seen politics that's divided people more? You don't dare talk politics with people unless you know where they stand, because it's complaining about this or that. Your jobs. I mean, I know people that are constantly, they have resumes out all the time. Different jobs, careers, just a constant resume search. Never satisfied with what you have. And it's kind of sad, because if we look at what we have in this country, we're the most blessed people that ever lived. I was talking to Will last night. We were eating. If we lived like our great-grandparents did and cut back, because I think about how much we go out to eat, how much we do stuff, they go once a year. And it might be, if they were in church, it was feast time. We live in a different way than anyone has ever lived. So let's go back and look, see what we can learn from the children of Israel, and see that if we don't learn this lesson, that it could cost us, because it certainly did that first generation of the children of Israel. So the first time we'll look before they went across the Red Sea, before they escaped slavery. You know, Moses, we watched the start of the Ten Commandments the other night, and that's a long show, but got to this part anyway. So Moses went and tried to get Pharaoh to release the Israelites, and he said, I won't do that. I'm going to even make it harder on you. No straw. You have to get your own straw, but you have to make the same amount of brick. So Moses had to go back and say, oops, sorry. But immediately you see this attitude. That's in Exodus 5, verses 20 and 21. Exodus 5, verses 20 and 21. So it says then, verse 20, as they came out from Pharaoh, they met Moses and Aaron, who stood there to meet them. And they said to them, let the Lord look on you and judge, because you have made us abhorrent in the sight of Pharaoh and in the sight of his servants, to put a sword in their hand to kill us. So immediately they're complaining, which you would be a little irritated at this, I suppose, at the beginning, but I would hope you would learn from it. Yes, it was more difficult. It was made more difficult for them. But how many of us have a job that if you do it right, your job's going to become more difficult? You're going to get more responsibility. A lot of times you're not going to get more pay. But look at the other option. Other option is you can't hold a job. You're out here homeless. You can't provide for your family. You don't know where your next meal is coming from. You know, accept it as a challenge. Yes, we all get jobs that we don't want. We don't want to do this, do that. But yes, it's going to be more difficult if we're doing our job. Years ago, my father had someone that worked for him, that worked for TVA for 20 years. I've told this story before, I know. He had the same job the first day as he did the very last day. Never got a promotion, never moved up at all, did the same job all the time. And yet he would complain to us about, oh, this guy, he moved up. It was ridiculous. He'd just work and work and work. He'd expect us to do the same thing. And yet he was mad because this guy actually was promoted because he did a good job. I know one time he mentioned that they were on a side of a road, and he found a couple of quarters. Okay, a couple of quarters fell out. So he spent the rest of the day looking for quarters on the side of the road. Job. I wonder why he didn't get promoted. You know, yes, we are going to face challenges with jobs, with careers. So we have to. So the second time they complained, they're at the Red Sea, right? They saw what had happened with all the miracles. Let's go to Exodus 14, verse 10 for this. Exodus 14, verse 10, they're standing at the edge of the Red Sea. Verse 10 says, "And when Pharaoh drew near, the children of Israel lifted their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them. So they were very afraid, and the children of Israel cried out to the Lord. Then they said to Moses, 'Because there were no graves in Egypt, have you taken us away to die in the wilderness? Why have you so dealt with us to bring us up out of Egypt? Is this not the word that we told you in Egypt, saying, "Let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians"?'" Don't remember too many times of that. "For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than that we should die in the wilderness." Again, witnessed all of those miracles, all of the miracles that were performed, and yet the first time something happens to them, God told him he's going to free them. They escaped Egypt, and immediately the first problem, start complaining. Are there times in our lives where we see this, where we don't see a lot of hope, but do we complain? Well, we get down, of course, we're disappointed. But again, whatever problems we have in this world, are we, again, not the most blessed people that ever lived? I don't know how many translations of the Bible I can get right here. Every translation in the world, every concordance that you need. We have more at our disposal than anyone's ever have. We have more food. When you look at it, we eat better than Solomon when you look at what he had with the spices, with everything that we have. What do we have to complain about? What do we have to complain about? Look at Job. We'll say one thing about Job. He did not complain. He accepted everything that he had. He took it and he fought through. The third time the Israelites complain, they complain about the water. The water is bitter. Exodus 15, verse 23. We are going to look at each one of these just to see. You see a constant attitude with each of these. Exodus 15, verse 23. Said, "Now when they came to Marah, they could not drink the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore the name of it was called Marah." I didn't look it up. I assume that means bitter. "And the people complained against Moses, saying, 'What shall we drink?'" Again, the last miracle they witnessed was the Egyptian army being destroyed while they got to escape. And again, the first real trial that they come upon, it's not to rely on God, it's not to look to God, it's to immediately complain. You know, we are faced with problems, and we have times where we pray for something, and it doesn't always save us, or God doesn't answer our prayers the way we want, but is it wise to turn around and complain? We will be faced with stuff. We may not get the answers we want. But at time, we don't turn around and complain. Again, look at Job. Excuse me. All the stuff he went through, never complained. Never complained. His wife told him, "Curse God and die." Well, he wouldn't do it. He wouldn't do it. Next time they complain, and I'm running through these pretty quickly, but just to look at this. Then they complained about being hungry. And Eric started touching on the quail and the manna there. Exodus 16, verse 2. Exodus 16, verse 2 says, "Then the whole congregation of the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the children of Israel said to them," again, going back to what they forgot all the rough times, "Oh, that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the pots of meat and when we ate bread to the full." They're just remembering those few times that it was good. "For you have brought us out into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger." Do you have someone in mind yet? Do you have someone that you know that is like this? That everything is negative all the time? I had a great aunt, and from what I hear from my dad, she was dying from the time she was a little girl. And that's because if you ask her how she was doing, she was constantly at the edge of death, and she lived till 90 something probably, and constantly complained. You couldn't even talk to her because she was always sick. And as my dad said, from the time he was little, he remembered her talking about how sick she was all the time. Don't be that person. Don't be that Saturday Night Live character, Debbie Downer, where it's always negative. Don't be that. The fifth time they complained, the people complained about being thirsty. Here they are again. They didn't like the bitter water. Didn't like the food that they're getting. Now they're complaining about being thirsty. Exodus 17, verse 3. It says, "And the people thirsted there for water, and the people complained against Moses and says," here we go again, "Why is it you have brought us out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our livestock with thirst?" And we all complain. I know we do. You know, I complained about stuff. But has complaining ever helped your situation? Is there a need to get sympathy from others? Is that what it is? Yeah, you may need some support every so often. But get these 5,000 grandchildren we have back here. One of them will fall, and they'll look around first. Did anybody see me? And if someone's looking at them, start crying. But if no one notices, a lot of times they'll just get up and walk it off and pay no attention. But what can we do when we fall down? Well, we can pray to God, but that's not what the Israelites did. Anything that went wrong, again, we know that getting out of Egypt represents removing from sin, but they immediately went back to that same mindset that they always had. Again, instead of praying, instead of relying on God, they just started complaining, blaming Moses. God's going to eventually get tired of that because he talks about the heart. You know, we know the New Testament is more about the heart and all of that. God's going to get tired if we're constantly complaining about everything. Life's not good. Well, he's given us more than anyone in history, as far as I'm concerned. So here we come to a new complaint. And it's the sixth time they complain. Israel complains to Aaron that they need a new God. And this is Exodus 32, verse 1. This is when Moses goes up to get the Ten Commandments. And, of course, he does not come down for a while. And so what do they do here? Immediately start to complain. Exodus 32, verse 1 says, "Now when the people saw Moses delayed coming down from the mountain, the people gathered together to Aaron and said, 'Come, make us gods that shall go before us. For as for this Moses," I like the way they phrase that, this Moses guy, you know, not even recognizing who he was. "As for this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him." Have we ever considered that if we complain enough, God will reach a breaking point? And this is the case where at this point, God became a father, and I guess you could say he took his belt off. All right, he's tired of it at this point. The Levites were then ordered to kill, and 3,000 people were killed that day. God finally has a breaking point if we don't change. we don't have that humility, that thankfulness that he wants. How can we have him first in our life? Because we know the two great commandments. If we're constantly complaining about our own life, that's going to be the points of how to fix this a little bit later. But if we're constantly complaining, we're not putting anyone except ourselves first. Again, God's pretty well fed up with him at this point. And then what happens? They continue to complain. And when they continued to complain, God had many of them consumed by fire. Numbers 11, verses 1 through 6. We'll read that because pretty important to see that there is a breaking point. God loves us, but he also expects obedience. He expects us to bow down before him. Numbers 11, verse 1. Now, when the people complained, it displeased the Lord, for the Lord heard it, and his anger was aroused. And so here we go again with that belt. So the fire of the Lord burned among them and consumed some in the outskirts of the camp. Then the people cried out to Moses. Now they want Moses' help. And when Moses prayed to the Lord, the fire was quenched. Rather than complain, they could have done this the entire time. Pray. But instead, they'd rather complain. So he called the name of the place Taberah, I guess, because the fire of the Lord had burned among them. Now the mixed multitude who were among them yielded to intense craving. So we have a different group here that some follow different beliefs. So the children of Israel also wept again and said, we go back to Egypt. They're craving to go back to that, aren't they? Who will give us meat to eat? We remember the fish which we ate freely in Egypt, the cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, and the garlic. But now our whole being is dried up. There is nothing at all except this manna before our eyes. You know, begging for that, and once they get it, they don't want it anymore. They don't want that. As far as what we have physically, we're in that land of milk and honey that they were seeking. We have anything in the world that we want to eat. And yet we may still complain about something. Oh, I don't like that. And yet we still, there are people around the world that would give anything to have whatever little stuff we had for breakfast this morning. May not amount to anything, but to them it would have been one of the greatest meals they ever had. You know, if God provides for us this much, why should we ever complain? Like what Mr. Petty said, some of our unleavened bread, that's not unleavened bread. You know, it's too good. It represents something that's really good. So you don't get that feeling out of the physical bread. But as you can see here, if we continue to complain, and it could be about anything, God may just put a test to us as he did someone like Job, because I don't think we ever want to be tested the way Job was. So now here we come to another one. And this is not the entire group. These are a couple of the leaders that complain. Miriam and Aaron complain about Moses and his leadership. Let's look at that. Numbers 12, verse 2 and 3. Numbers 12, verses 2 and 3. So they don't like that Moses is getting the credit. They're going to complain. So they said, has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moses? Has he not spoken through us also? And the Lord heard it. And here's where it says, now the man Moses was very humble, more than all men who were on the face of the earth. And we know what happened to Miriam. She was given leprosy. And what I understand, that's just your flesh rotting off. That doesn't exactly sound like something we want. Well, God punished them for complaining again. And when we look at, what is it, Romans 13, I think, it talks about God putting people in leadership positions. You know, we may not like the president, we may not like the last president, we may not like the president of our church or the past, whatever it is. What business is it of ours? Because God himself says he puts these people in power. You may not like a president. Well, God may have something in store to get his kingdom here closer. Whatever it is, we can't complain no matter how we feel personally about our leadership. God did that. If God needs to remove whoever that is, God will certainly do it. So we need to watch it, because Miriam, you see, she certainly faced some repercussions for that. So now we come to the edge of the Promised Land, and they have the ability to take this land that they had been promised. And so the ninth time they complain is found in Numbers 14, verses 1 through 4. So they see the people that were there were mighty people, forgot all of that, the Egyptians and what God did with them. This is Numbers 14, verse 1. So all the congregation lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron, and the whole congregation said to them, "If only we had died in the land of Egypt." I'm sure God's really sick of hearing this. "Or if only we had died in this wilderness. Why has the Lord brought us to this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and children should become victims? Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt?" 40 years, and all of a sudden they want to go back to Egypt. So they said to one another, "Let us select a leader and return to Egypt." As we sit here every Sabbath, while others are out there doing whatever they like, we could say we don't want to walk the straight and narrow path. And if we don't, we certainly have the choice, because sometimes it is difficult. You're faced with problems at work, problems, family, whatever it is. But we should never want to return to Egypt. We should never want to go back to that life. And yet the Israelites, after 40 years, survived in a desert that virtually impossible to live in for 40 years, and yet they want to go back to that life. What does the Lord's Prayer say? "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done." If we wish to be a part of God's kingdom, not like the Israelites who never got to experience it, the first generation, we've got to wish never to return. We don't want to go back to Egypt in any way. We don't want to go back. We just went through examining ourselves, whether we can be that way or not, whether we're going to put God first. Tenth time, again, God's sick of this at this point. The people complained again. They want to kill Moses. Again, Numbers 14, verse 10. Said, "And all the congregation said to stone them with stones. Now the Lord appeared in the tabernacle meeting before all the children of Israel." So he's finally showing he's done. He's done with these people. He's going to kill all of them. He tells Moses, "We'll just start over. Just start over with you. I'm through with these people." Will there be a time when God's tired of us complaining? And some of the most positive people I know are in this room. And I struggle with complaining about stuff that I have no business complaining about sometimes. Forget how lucky we are. But is there going to come a time when God said, "I've given, given, given. I'm done. I'm done with it." So how do we stop this? I've just got three little points here. They're very simple. They're the... The two great commandments are the first two. But three ways to stop this. Number one point is, put God first in your life. It's an extremely easy thing to say. It's very hard to do. If the focal point's not on yourself, you don't have time to complain. You don't have time to think about something like that. How do we take the time to truly study, pray, become closer to God? Because that is how you get closer, is your relationship with God is that. is your study and your praying, your faith. All of those allow you to be closer, and you have to be, because God says put him first in your life. But if you're worrying about that, getting closer to God, you're not worried about your own predicaments. You're not worried about them. The second one, just like the commandments say, the second's just like the first. Put others ahead of yourself. Put others ahead of yourself. 12-year-old little girl, Jessie Reese, she was fighting cancer. She's at the Children's Hospital in Orange County, California. And when she's in the hospital, she was in bad shape. She saw that a lot of the other kids were in the same predicament she was in. So she sat in the hospital and she started taking little mason jars, little different jars, and filling them with little things. At that time, it was Beanie Babies, little bitty coloring books, things like that. So she started filling little jars and then handing them to the other children in the hospital. She went beyond that. People, I think a local news station picked it up and showed what she was doing. And think about her predicament. 12-year-old, that's pretty tough. But it got big enough that she did die of cancer in 2012. But before she died, she'd been able to personally fill 3,000 jars to help other kids just like her. Her movement, her family, some of her friends got involved. They filled over 80,000 jars for other little kids. Now, she could have sat there. She could have said, woe is me. She showed an attitude that I don't have. I wish I had. But she decided not to focus on herself, not to focus on, hey, it's not fair, and it wasn't for her, but it was her lot in life. But instead, she decided to help other people. That's how you realize I don't have anything to complain about, when you look at an example like this little girl. All right. The third point is pull the beam out of your own eye. We all have our own problems that we need to focus on what we need to do. It's easy to find fault with others. Look, hey, Moses. Oh, it's Moses' fault. It's God's fault. It's very easy. You know, we just came through a time. Are we getting closer to God, or we just repeat the days of unleavened bread for the 40th time? Haven't learned anything. Do we fall short in this area? Quick little story here. I know I've told this before. It says a young couple moved into a new neighborhood. The first morning, while they were eating breakfast, the young woman saw her neighbor hanging the wash outside. That laundry's not very clean. She doesn't know how to wash correctly. Perhaps she needs better laundry soap. Her husband looked up, didn't say a word. Every time her neighbor hung her wash out, the young woman made the same comments. She needs better soap. She doesn't know how to wash. A month later, the woman was surprised to see a nice clean wash on the line and said to her husband, "Look, she finally learned how to wash correctly. I wonder who taught her this." The husband replied, "I got up early this morning and cleaned our windows." Pull the beam out of our own eye, right? All right, let's conclude with one verse, or two verses, to explain what we're looking at. Philippians 2, verses 14 and 15. Tells us what God wants out of us. Philippians 2, verses 14 and 15. Says, "Do all things without complaining and disputing, that you may become blameless and harmless, children of God without fault, in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom, I think this is very important, we got to keep this in mind, among whom you shine as lights in the world."